The morning of today's daf is Kuf Yud Aleph. We are starting to end the Mishnah towards the top of Kuf Yud Aleph today. Yirtzeh Hashem will be finishing the 14th parak of the Masechta, beginning the 15th parak, last three parakim of the Masechta, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, and Yud Aleph. 12th, 13th, 14th parakim have dealt with the Malacha. After going in Masechta Shabbos through a long excursion of Hotza'ah, from about the end of the 7th parak all the way through and including the 11th parak. So the last three parakim, we then took on each one of the malachas in what seems to be no particular order. And we have tackled and covered the various malachos of Shabbos. We are now discussing the malacha, no particular malacha per se, but the general idea of refuah. We spoke at length over the Gemara's yesterday, and we're going to continue today. Discussing what you could take as medicine and what you cannot take as medicine. The rule, as we learned on the Mishnah on Kuf Tes Amud Beis, is that anything which is qualifies as a food can be taken even if you're taking it as a therapy. On the other hand, the food, and the same thing is true regarding drinks as well. If you have a drink that is defined as a beverage, so that can be taken even if you're taking it as a therapy. That is the general idea, as indicated in the Mishnah on Kuf Tes. And since then, the Gemara has gone back and forth through both the halachas of refuah and Shabbos, what you can and cannot take. And also, we spent a lot of time talking about therapies in general. Yesterday, we spent a lot of time discussing various therapies that could be taken for ailments like jaundice and ziva. And now, we are continuing our discussion in the Gemara, and we are on the same path as well. We're discussing today for the end of the 14th parak, the issue of refuah. Let us begin the Mishnah. Achoshesh b'shin of somebody who is having a toothache. Lo yigamei bahem esa chometz. A person cannot go ahead and rinse with vinegar. Rinsing with vinegar back in the day was considered very efficacious in terms of ailment, of, I'm sorry, of healing him from his ailment. And so as a result of that, a person would go ahead and drink vinegar. Now, who drinks vinegar by itself? So the answer, of course, is nobody. Vinegar is a nice complement to other foods, but nobody drinks vinegar in of itself. So the Mishnah therefore says, lo yigamei bahem esa chometz. You can't just simply swallow vinegar straight, even though vinegar is considered a food, but not in that manner. As a result of that, a person is not allowed to drink in that manner. Now, I'm vacillating between rinsing and drinking. We're going to see in just a moment what is a good shot in the Mishnah. That's coming up in just a moment. Now, the Mishnah then goes on to say that what you could do is you could dip your bread in the vinegar and you can eat the bread. And the fact that you're going to be getting now benefit, medicinal benefit from the vinegar, that would be fine because now you're eating it, you're consuming it in a normal fashion, and that you're allowed to do on Shabbos, even though what comes along with it is some therapy. Hachoshes b'masnav, a person is feeling some pain in his thighs and his hips. Lo yisoch yain v'chometz. So don't rub neither wine nor vinegar in that area. The anointing of these liquids are not considered normal. It is clearly done for medicinal purposes, and therefore that would be prohibited. Avasachu is a shemen, but what you could do is you could rub oil into it because rubbing oil into your skin, that in the, back in the day was something that's normal. And so therefore, this is a normal activity and it can be done on Shabbos. You're doing it in order to relieve yourself from some of the pain. But since this is a normal activity, therefore, you're allowed to do it. Velo shemen vered. And the Mishnah here puts in one proviso, and that is that you cannot use rose oil. Rose oil was something that was used by the aristocracy. Rose oil was very expensive. And if anyone's using rose oil, you know that they're not just simply rubbing it into their skin. You know that they're doing it for the therapy. Nobody would be paying that kind of money for something unless there was a need for it or unless you were extraordinarily wealthy. So if you're not extraordinarily wealthy, if you're just a regular person, so clearly the only intent that you have with the Shemen Verit is to use it as a therapy. And that's why the Mishnah prohibits it. Now, if you happen to be a member of the aristocracy, then that would be great. Now, you are allowed to use the Shemen Vered because for you, there is a very good chance that this is something which is a normal application. You would do this even if you weren't experiencing pain. Shekein darchen lasoch b'chol. They do this during the week. Rabbi Shimon Amar kol Yisrael b'nei malachim heim. Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that b'nei Yisrael are all considered b'nei malachim. They're all considered aristocracy. And so therefore, Rabbi Shimon gives an allowance for people to go ahead and to rub it into the skin, even the rose oil, because he feels that, look, we're all special. We're all royalty. And so therefore, he gives an allowance to it. This sheet of Rabbi Shimon is going to be explored a little bit more in the Gemara. So in the mission, we dealt with two basic issues. One is eating a food in an abnormal fashion, like drinking vinegar straight. And the second one is rubbing into your skin something that normally does not get rubbed into the skin. The Gemara tackles the first issue. Ramilei Rav Acha Aricha. Duhu Rav Acha Bar Papa Rabbi Abba. The following question was posed. And that is Tanan. We learned in the Mishnah. Choshesh Bishinav Lo Yigama Behem Esa Chometz. In the Mishnah, it says that if you take vinegar straight, so you can't do that because it is a therapy. L'memer D'chometz Ma'ala L'shinayim. Now, the Mishnah is working with an assumption that vinegar is very good for your teeth. On the other hand, haksiv, we have a pasuk, kechomets l'shinayim u'kashan le'inayim. Pasuk in Mishlei describing somebody who's lazy. The Mishnah over there says that it is like chomets l'shinayim, it's terrible. It's like vinegar for the teeth. Kashan le'inayim, like smoke for the eyes. Now, we all know and can agree that smoke for the eyes is not good. So now the Mishnah here is talking about chomets l'shinayim, vinegar for the teeth. From the context of the pasuk, it also seems like it's not good. And how can our Mishnah open up with an assumption that vinegar is good for the teeth? So, lakasha habakiyui deperi habachalam. Gemara makes a couple of distinctions. The first one is between different types of vinegars. If the vinegar is just simply grapes that were not fully ripened, and so what you're really eating is the acidic version of the juice expressed out of a grape, that's not good. On the other hand, chala, if we're talking about vinegar that was processed and fermented like vinegar normally is, so then that would be fine. That's one distinction that we can make. The Pasuk and Mishle is talking about the former. Our Mishle is talking about the latter. Ibai Sema, another suggestion, hava hava chalo. Both are talking about vinegar. Had the ikamaka, had the leka maka. The Mishle is talking about where there actually is a wound in the mouth, and the Pasuk and Mishle is talking about when there's no wound. Ikamaka mase. Because if there's a wound in the mouth, so the vinegar actually is very good. Leka maka. But if there's no wound in the mouth and you're just simply gargling, you're rinsing and drinking vinegar straight, marpe, it loosens. And it does not have a positive benefit, just the opposite. It will have a negative benefit. That's another way to resolve the difference between our Mishnah and the Pasuk. Continuing now in the Gemara, you're not allowed to swallow vinegar. That Tanya, we learned in the Braisa, loigama upolate. So here in the Braisa, we're making a very simple distinction. And that is that to rinse and gargle and to spit out, that's clearly medicinal and that's clearly going to be prohibited. However, if you want to go ahead and chug down some vinegar, by all means, go ahead. That is the Braisa. So the Braisa here is talking about making a distinction between the gargling of vinegar versus the ingesting of vinegar, the former being prohibited, the latter being permitted. So Amar Abayi, now that seems to go against our Mishnah. So Abayi gives a very simple response. It's not going against our Mishnah. Ki tananami masnisa megamei apolate. The proper way to understand our Mishnah is that our Mishnah is also talking about gargling. Now, from the Mishnah, it's not super clear. The Mishnah says, achoshesh bishinav, I'm rereading the Mishnah, lo yigamea behem esachomet. Now, the word gamea could really go either way. It's an ambiguous term. But now Abayi is saying, but now that we have the Braisa, so now we're going to say good pshat in the Mishnah. The Mishnah means that you're not allowed to rinse, you're not allowed to gargle the vinegar. But if you want to go ahead and you want to ingest it, that would be fine. That is the first approach of the Gemara, and as we'll see in just a minute, that's the accepted approach of the Gemara. That's really the correct way to understand the Mishnah. And now we have a complement between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Rava, my Rava wants to try to give a different answer. Afilu tema megameo boleo. Could be that the Mishnah and Braisa are both talking about ingestion. Kan lifnei tibul, kan la'achar tibul. It depends whether or not you are before you ate or after you ate. Before you ate, I mean, that's kodem tibul. Before you ate, so you're hungry. So you're good and you're hungry. So what are you going to do? So what you're going to do is that you're going to eat. And the fact that right now you're swallowing vinegar seems a little bit strange. but understandably you're hungry right now, and so it can be viewed as a regular food, and even though really your true intent is to get the health benefit of the vinegar. On the other hand, the brisa is talking about after you ate. So you ate already, you just finished eating. That's la'achar tibul. And at this point in time, you're really not that interested in eating. People now are seeing you go ahead and gulping down vinegar. Understood now that the only reason why you're doing that is for therapy. That's the answer that Rav is trying to suggest. Now the Gemara says, wait 1 second. So according to Rav's answer, there's a distinction to be made between before eating versus after eating. In of itself, that's a very difficult distinction, and specifically to put on Rava. Why? Because we know elsewhere that Rava holds of the following principle. The principle is called Hoel. The Amar Rava Lekamid the Bishabishari Biyama Kippur Maser, hold the Bisharishari, Biyama Kippur Namishari. Now we just read the Gemara in his application of this principle of Hoel. First, let me speak about the application in general, the idea in general, and then we'll put it into the example that the Gemara just gave. The idea in general of Hoel is this idea that if the Torah is in fact going to permit in one area, the Torah is going to permit in every related area. Hoel literally means since. Or we could also say it as a rabbinic injunction as well. If the rabbis permitted in one area, they permit in other areas as well, in similar situations or in situations that aren't even similar but are of a lesser concern. Okay, that's the idea. Let's see if we can now plug it in over here as it relates to the Gemara's comparison between Shabbos and Yom Kippur. Nothing which is not prohibited on Shabbos is for sure not going to be prohibited on Yom Kippur. Okay, that's the idea of Hoel now being applied to Shabbos and Yom Kippur. Now, obviously, you have to think about it. In other words, that of course is not true all around. You know, you're allowed to eat on Shabbos. You know, you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. So obviously, that's a poor application of the principle. What's a better application of the principle? So let's talk about toveling in the mikvah. Toveling in the mikvah is something that is allowed on Shabbos. If a woman has a tefillah to do on Friday night, she goes to the mikvah on Friday night. Bathing on Shabbos. So bathing on Shabbos, we discussed earlier in the Masechta. But over here, we don't even have to get into the bathing issue. Meaning this is not a bath, this is tefillah b'mikvah, which is allowed to be done on Shabbos. And so now, applying the principle of Hoel, if toveling in the mikvah would be acceptable to be done on Shabbos, Rava says, of course it'd be acceptable to be done on Yom Kippur. You can't have something which Shabbos, it's okay, and then Yom Kippur be prohibited. Now, the basis of this argument is the fact that when I put Shabbos and Yom Kippur side by side, Shabbos has more Kedusha. Shabbos has more Isser. If something is permitted on Shabbos, it for sure is going to be permitted on Yom Kippur as well. This is the principle of Hoel as applied by Rava. Now, the reason why a person is allowed to go to the mikvah on Shabbos is because, again, it's tefillah, and for the purposes of a mitzvah, one is allowed to do so. Now, Yom Kippur, there is a consideration. On Yom Kippur, of course, we know the halach is that rechitza on Yom Kippur is prohibited. But only rechitza shaltanov, only when the bathing on Yom Kippur is for a purpose of pleasure. Over here at Tzvila, it's allowed on Shabbos. The principle of Hoel tells me that if it's allowed on Shabbos, it's also allowed on Yom Kippur as well. Okay, that is now Rava and the idea of Hoel and the application as it relates to Shabbos and Yom Kippur. Now let's bring it full circle to our discussion. In our discussion, so we talked about eating vinegar, consuming vinegar, drinking it straight. Rava says, well, maybe a distinction can be made between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And the Mishnah that says that is not allowed, that's after you ate. The Braisa that says that it is allowed is talking about before you ate. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. I now know the principle of Hoel. Hoel tells me that if there is a time when it would be allowed, so then it should always be allowed. If one is allowed to drink the vinegar before you eat, then for sure then one would be allowed to drink the vinegar after you eat as well. And so therefore the Gemara says, what I'm bothered by now is Rava's resolution, the Mishnah, the Braisa, versus Rava's general principle of Hoel, they don't go hand in hand. So Hadabei Rava Mehach. So the Gemara says, okay, here's what we're going to say. Rava's principle of Hoel stands. Rava reversed his answer here in our Mishnah. In the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Gemara, Rava ends up reversing his position and then ends up siding with Abai's answer. Now, so the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. How do I know that? Maybe Rava reversed his whole position on Hohel. Maybe his answer over here in Shabbos, in the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Braisa, maybe that is what stands. And if we're going to be reversing anyway Rava's position, maybe we should reverse Rava's position regarding Hohel. The Gemara says, lo sakadaka. No, that's not something which we can even entertain. The Tanya relents on a Braisa called Chai Vichil Tovlin Kedarkan, Bein B'Tishabav, Bein B'Yom Kippur. The Braisa tells us that all tefillah obligations a person can tovel, whether it be Tishabav or whether it be Yom Kippur. So you see clearly over here the idea that the Braisa is saying that one is allowed to tovel in Yom Kippur. Why is one allowed to tovel in Yom Kippur? So you must use the principle of Hohel. So we have now Rava not only making the statement, but being supported by the Braisa we just learned. So if anything is going to give, it's going to be his answer that he gave here in our Mishnah in terms of explaining the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And so therefore, Rava's position of Hohel stands. Rava's answer to the discrepancy is now just simply going to go back to Abaye, and now everything is cleaned up. Quickly to summarize now, the Mishnah says that one is not allowed to swallow vinegar. The Braisa says that one is allowed to. We have two distinctions to give to how to explain the discrepancy. One is Abaye, the difference between gargling versus actually ingesting. Gargling, that's strictly medicinal, that's prohibited. Ingesting, you could call that eating, strange as it may be, but you can call that eating, and therefore they would be okay. I have the Mishnah that says that's prohibited. The Mishnah is talking about gargling. Okay, that's answer number one. Answer number two is Rava, but Rava himself gave the answer. Rava retracted from that answer. The answer was, there's a difference between before eating, where everybody knows you're hungry, and so therefore it can be viewed as regular consumption, versus after you ate, where you're not hungry anymore, and it can't be viewed as regular consumption, and therefore everyone understands you're doing it for the medicinal value. With that stated, however, Rava retracted because that offends his general position of Hohel, as we just explained. Let's continue in the Gemara. Choshesh b'masnav. We're now describing the person who's got some pain in his hips. Amar Rabbi Abba bar Zavda, Amar Rabbi Halacha to Rabbi Shimon. Now, in the Mishnah, can I use rose oil? Can I use regular oil? Absolutely. Wine and vinegar? No. But rose oil is subject to a debate in our Mishnah between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim, the Tanakhama. Tanakhama says rose oil is a luxury item used only by royalty, and therefore can only be used by B'nai Malachim. But for you and I to use rose oil, so people know that we're not B'nai Malachim, so the only reason why we would have bought it is only for its medicinal value, and therefore we're not allowed to use it. On the other hand, the Shita of Rabbi Shimon is Kol Yisrael B'nai Malachim. The Jewish people all can consider themselves royalty, and as a result of that, we are all allowed to use rose oil in order to alleviate some of the pain in our hips, because it's, for us, it's considered standard practice because we could treat ourselves as royalty. The Gemara quotes in the name of Rav that the halacha, in fact, follows like Rabbi Shimon. And so therefore, the ruling of the Gemara right now is that one is allowed to use rose oil, even if not a member of the royal family. Now, Lamehmed the Rav to Rabbi Shimon Svirlei, the Gemara says, then wait 1 second. Now, you're telling me that Rav passes like Rabbi Shimon, but the Gemara says, but I know elsewhere, Rav does not pass like Rabbi Shimon. The Amar of Shimi Barchia Mishmei the Rav, Hai Mr. Chai, the Nezaisa. Asur lahaduke biyumatava. So, we know that when it comes to plugging up a hole on Yontif, one cannot take a rag in order to plug up the hole on Yontif. We're talking about a barrel of beer, where basically what you did is you put an opening in it in order to put the spigot in order to allow some beer to come out. It's really not a good, it's not a good seal. So what you're tempted to do is take a rag on Shabbos, in this case it's on Yom Tov, but the halacha is going to be the same in both, and go ahead and stuff it in that spot in order to plug up the hole. What is going to happen as a result of that is that you're going to be taking that rag, squeezing it into the spot, and you're going to be squeezing some of the liquid out of that rag. This presumably would be the malach of schita, of going ahead and squeezing something out of what's holding it. Generally speaking, we talk about schita in terms of in terms of squeezing a juice. But over here, if the rag has got a lot of good beer in it and I'm squeezing it, that also is a violation of Shechita. Presumably that's what it is. The Gemara actually doesn't say which malacha it is, but presumably it's Shechita. That's what Rashi says. Tosfos has a much lengthier discussion in terms of the nature of which malacha is it. But for our purposes right now, let's assume it's Shechita. And what Rav says is that I say that it's usur to do that. And again, so if you take a look at the top of the Amud, usur lahaduka biyomatova. So Rav's of the opinion that you're not allowed to do it. Now, here's what the Gemara's thought process is. Now, we have to fill in a lot of what the Gemara is thinking right now, because quite frankly, it is difficult to understand what the two have to do with one another. First of all, let's still stay on the topic of putting the rag into the hole. As we already pointed out, that is the malach of schit. Rav says you're not allowed to do it. Now, let's think about this for a moment. And this is the thought process of the Gemara. If Rav is telling us you're not allowed to do it, so what's your intention? Really, what your intention is to plug in the hole. The fact that now juice is coming out of that rag as you're squeezing it in, that is only something that is an unintended consequence. What we call in halacha davar sheino miskaven. We know time and again throughout our masechta, machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon says davar sheino miskaven is mutter. Rabbi Yehuda says davar sheino miskaven is aser. If Rav is telling us over here that one is prohibited from squeezing, from putting the rag into the hole and in order to stuff up the hole, it must be because he subscribes to the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, not Rabbi Shimon. Because it's a davar sheino miskaven, and Rav says it's prohibited, he's aligning himself with the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, and now we get to the tough part. So you see over there by davar sheino miskaven, he sides with Rabbi Yehuda, not with Rabbi Shimon. And now what the Gemara is asking is, well, if that's true, how can he say in our Mishnah that halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon, when meanwhile, by davar sheino miskaven, he rejects the position of Rabbi Shimon, seemingly. That's the Gemara's question. Now, on that, we can ask something really simple and basic. What do the two have to do with one another? Our topic over here is, can we consider ourselves to be royalty? Debate between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon. Davar sheino miskaven is a general discussion debate in Shabbos where I am not intending for the second consequence. So is that allowed or not allowed? Machlok chin Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yehuda. Is it not possible that by davar sheino miskaven, Rav can hold like Rabbi Yehuda, and on our topic over here, he could hold like Rabbi Shimon, as they seemingly are two totally different issues? Rashi on the bottom of the Amud Aleph of today's daf addresses that question. Rashi says, L'meima d'Rav. So Rashi over here, B'kulei Shabbos Tzvira Lei K'Rabbi Shimon. Rashi makes the following assertion in terms of understanding the Gemara. And that is that we're going to assume that Rav is going to be following like Rabbi Shimon throughout all of Hilchos Shabbos. Now, there are two versions of Rashi. One is the word B'kulei with a kuf. And you can see in the parentheses, there's one B'kulei with a chaf. Now, interesting, because they really do mean two different things. Kule just simply means that whenever Rav Shimon espouses a leniency throughout all of Masechta Shabbos, Rav holds by that leniency. That is one possibility to understand the assumption of the Gemara. The other one, in the parentheses, Bechule, meaning that Rav is just simply a Rabbi Shimon guy throughout all Hilchos Shabbos. Bein l'kula, bein l'chumra. Rav always subscribes to the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. Okay. Either way you say it, now you understand that there's a problem. In that, if that's true, if that assertion is true, so that now, much like Rav is passing like Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah, that Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim, so then he should be passing like Rabbi Shimon on a davar sheino miskaven, and we know that he does not. Or we think that he does not. We think that he passes like Rabbi Yehuda. For more on this topic of understanding the connection between the Rabbi Shimon, between our topic of using rose oil, and the issue of davar sheino miskaven, you can see Tosos, where I'm not going to go through it right now, second to last Tosos on the Amud Aleph, where he quotes Rabbi Natan, who understands that the connection between the two was actually much closer, much tighter than the way Rashi described it. Rashi described it as just simply Rav being a Rabbi Shimon guy. Rabbi Natan says, no, the issues are actually more related. See Tosos there for a discussion on understanding the relationship between the two. And If falls under Ochel Nefesh, that is a great question. Schita on Yontif is still going to be prohibited, even though there's a food benefit from it. The Gemara in Beitza, although never making this point absolutely clear, says that the only malachas that are okay for Ochel Nefesh is only from Lush and onward. Again, the Gemara never makes that point super clear. But anyway, Schita is something that could have been done before Yontif, and therefore is not allowed on Yontif itself. So the malachas that are allowed on Yontif are kneading, baking, cooking, shechting an animal, things that have to be done necessarily on Yontif in order to produce fresh food. That's the assumption of the Gemara in Beitza. Yeah. Well, the Gemara is basically going to, in terms of answering this question, Gemara is not going to say exactly what you're saying, but in a similar vein. So the Gemara says, Afilu Tema, Afilu, I'm sorry, as we turn now to the top of Kuf Yad Alf, Amud Beis, Afilu Rabbi Shimon Moda. So the Gemara says that, no, Rabbi Shimon is going to agree over here. So the Gemara says, we know that in this particular case, when you're plugging up the hole, so the fact that you're squeezing the rag, that is an inevitable consequence. Inevitable consequences, that's a psik resha. We know that Rabbi Shimon even agrees by psik resha. So here's what we could say. We could say that Rav is in fact passing like Rabbi Shimon on the issue of rose oil, on the issue of davish and miskaven. As far as the case of stuffing up the hole, that is considered a psik resha. We know that Rabbi Shimon agrees by psik resha. Gemara says, okay, that's a good suggestion. We know we have a tradition that Rav and Shmuel debate whether the halacha by Davar Sheni Miskaven falls like Rabbi Yehuda or like Rabbi Shimon. And we have a tradition. Rav aligns himself with Rabbi Yehuda. And we have a tradition. Shmuel aligns himself with Rabbi Shimon. Rav Chia bar Rav and Matni Lebelo Gavrei. Rav Amar halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda, Shmuel Amar halacha ki Rabbi Shimon. And so we now have traditions that tell us that Rav aligns himself with Rabbi Yehuda and Shmuel aligns himself with Rabbi Shimon. And so now we're back to square one, because now how can Rav and our Mishnah paskin like Rabbi Shimon, and by Davar Sheni Miskaven he's paskin like Rabbi Yehuda? So Ella Amar Rava Ani Va'ari Shebechabur Targimnei. So me and the line of the group are going to explain. And who's that lion? Umanu Rabbi Chia Bar Avin Halachik Rabbi Shimon V'Lav Mitamei. So we misunderstood that as far as Rav is concerned he's paskin like Rabbi Shimon, but not because of the reason of Rabbi Shimon. My halachic Rabbi Shimon v'lav mitame. Now, what exactly does that mean? Ilem halachic Rabbi Shimon deshare. He allows the usage of rose oil on Shabbos, but v'lav mitame. Ilu Rabbi Shimon savar masay. Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that what it does is it provides a therapy, and since it provides a therapy, so therefore it's going to be a banned activity. Rabbi Shimon says that it is going to create a therapy. And therefore, it would be acceptable according to Rabbi Shimon. Rav agrees with the conclusion, but not with the reason. Rav savar lamase. Rav is just simply of the opinion that, look, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't really create any kind of therapy. The reason why it's allowed is simply because it doesn't really help you. The savar Rav lamase, the Gemara says, is that really a tenable position? So we have in the Mishnah that the B'nai Malachim are doing it, and they're doing it because it hurts. So, Shemen Verin Mechlal Damase. It's hard to imagine that the entire debate revolves around the efficacy of using rose oil. Does it help or does it not help? And the simple reading of the Mishnah is, it really does help. So the Gemara says, okay, so scratch that idea. Let's suggest something else. El Halachik Rabbi Shimon Deshari, the Halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon, that's Mutter. But not for the reason of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon suffer af agav delo shchiach share. Rabbi Shimon says that even though it is something that is not common, meaning it's a highly unusual activity, and you going ahead and putting out that money in order to buy the rose oil is something which is highly unusual, everyone understands that you're doing it because you are hurting, you're in pain. And according to Rabbi Shimon, that's fine because kol yisrael b'nei malachim. That's the thought process of Rabbi Shimon. And Rav, on the other hand, Savar, now again, he agrees with the conclusion, but not the reason. Ish chiyach in, v'ilo shchiyach lo. Look, if it's something which is easily accessible to everybody, so then it's not strange for somebody to rub rose oil in, whether there's pain or whether there's no pain. If it happens to be that in the location you live, it's not something which is normal and common, so then you're not allowed to use the rose oil because everyone understands that you're only using it for its therapy. It happens to be that in Rav's community, rose oil was very common. And so therefore, everybody uses it under all circumstances. And that's the discrepancy between Rav and Rabbi Shimon. Rav is agreeing with the conclusion of the Rabbi Shimon, but not the thought process of Rabbi Shimon. That's the distinction to be made. And so therefore, we don't have to corner ourselves in and say that Rav always passes like Rabbi Shimon. It's not true. Rav passes like Rabbi Yehuda by Davar Shehinu Mitzkaven. Rav ends up agreeing with Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah, but for a totally different reason, as we just articulated. Adron Lach Shemona Shratim, that is the end of the 14th parak of the Masechta. And let's begin this morning the 15th parak of the Masechta. We're talking about the Malacha of Kosher, tying. One of the 39 Malachas on Shabbos is to tie a knot. One on Shabbos is not allowed to tie a knot. With that stated, we are going to be discussing today's daf, tomorrow's daf, the very definition of what is considered a knot. These are the kinds of knots that a person would be chayev, meaning if he made such a knot, he'd be in full violation of Shabbos. So if you make a knot, that of the camel drivers would make, we'll be more specific about that knot in just a moment, or if you make a knot of that of the sailors would make, again, we're going to be more specific of that in the moment as well. So that would be prohibited. A prohibition of an Isser Daraisa. Ukishem shu chayav al kishiram kachu chayav al heteran. And just like one would be chayav for tying, one would also be chayav for untying as well. Meaning in the malachas of Shabbos, we learn together that there are two malachas that are basically mirror images of one another. One is kosher and the other is matir, tying and untying. So whatever serves as the definition of tying, meaning this camel's knot and the sailor's knot, is also going to be true regarding untying as well. Reb Meir Omer, Kol Kesher Shu Yachol Atira Ba'achas Miyadav Ein Chayav in Love. Reb Meir is of the opinion that anytime you have a knot and you can untie it with one hand, so you're not going to be liable for making such a knot. We'll come back to the Shita of Reb Meir. We'll explore a little bit more in the upcoming Gemara. But in the meantime, however, some basic definition is necessary. We learned together there are two knots that are Isurei Daraisa, camel's knot and the sailor's knot. What are we describing over here? So my kesher gamal v'kesher asapanim ilema katara dekatra bezama v'katra dektira biistardia. So the Gemara says maybe we think like this. Okay, ever gone boating before? So as you're approaching the dock, what you're going to now do is that you're going to take the rope that is that's connected already to the boat, and you're going to take that rope and wrap it around one of the big poles on the dock, in order to make sure that the boat is secured in that area. Okay, good. And then for the more experienced, so they tied in a knot that is going to be pretty tight. The Gemara right now thinks maybe that's what we're describing in terms of the sailor. And in terms of the camel driver, similarly, the camel's got a ring attached to its nose. And so what you're going to do now is that you're going to tie a rope to the ring in order to make sure that the camel is now good and in place. The Gemara says, in both of those examples, those are poor examples. Haikesha she'enok shel kayama hu. So the Gemara says, not so good. That is a kesher she'eno shel kayama. Both of those knots are not made to last forever. In fact, the very nature of docking your boat, you know you're going to undock it. The very nature of tying your camel up with a leash, you know you're going to untie it. These are both temporary circumstances. I can't imagine, says the Gemara, that the definition of a malach of kosher is something where you're tying it, knowing full well that you're going to untie it. This is not a kesher shel kayama. So ela kutra de zamama gufe u de istraja gufe. So the Gemara says, okay, so here's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to redefine. When our Mishnah is talking about the camel's knot, the Mishnah is talking about the actual insertion of the ring. When I say a ring, it could also be some sort of rope into the actual nose of the camel, where there the tying is done for a permanent basis. And when we're talking about tying your rope to the sailor tying his rope to the dock, we don't mean the actual rope to the dock. We mean the loop that's fastened either to the boat or to the pier that is going to be there for, permanently. And then when the sailor now arrives at the dock, he's going to be using that loop in order to secure him to the dock. But in other words, it's the loop itself that's attached to the boat, or it's the loop itself that's attached to the pier. That is what the Mishnah is describing. The sense that we are all getting now from the Gemara is that what's the definition of a permanent knot? The definition of a permanent knot, one that wouldn't be chayav on Shabbos, is one where your intention is that you're intending on making it a permanent knot. Now, support for this idea comes from Rashi. Rashi writes, I'm going to show you the Rashi in the Mishnah. Rashi writes, she'eino matiro, it's the first Rashi in the Mishnah. I'll start from the beginning. Eluk sharma hamanuyim ba'avos malachos tektani are kosher v'hamatir kesher shel kayama. Of the malachos, we are now focusing on the malacha of kosher and matir. It has to be a permanent knot. And then Rashi writes, and I'm emphasizing, she'eino matiro le'olam. You're planning on tying it and leaving it there permanently. Dumi de kosher chute yirios hanifstakos. Anytime you have any one of the curtains in the Mishkan that become undone, you're going to want to tie it, and you're going to want to tie it permanently. So says Rashi is the definition of kosher. On the other hand, if your plans are to untie it in the near future, so that would not be a chilul Shabbos. Rashi writes also in the Mishnah, kachu chayv al heteran ki dafin b'chla gadol. Sayada hechilazon, is that the Rashi I want to show right now? No. Okay. Rashi just talked about where we find the untying in the Mishkan, and that is by the nets that are used to trap the chilazon. But that's not the Rashi I want to highlight right now. Okay. Anyway, it has to be something that is there permanently. So if you ask Rashi the question, what is the kind of knot that is going to be a Isra Daraisa? So it has to be a knot that you're making permanently. That would be the definition according to Rashi. Now, I keep highlighting that it's Rashi's position. The Rambam doesn't fully agree. We'll come back to the Shita of the Rambam in just a moment. Rabbi Meir Omer Kol Kesher. Let's just first continue, really finish up the daf, and if time will allow, I'll go over the Shita of the Rambam at the end. Rabbi Meir Omer Kol Kesher. Rabbi Meir says that if you can untie the knot with one hand, that's not a knot. Now, by Rav Achdebuye, Achud Mar Acha. So the following question was asked by Rav Achdebuye, who happens to be the brother of Mar Acha. Aniva l'Rav Meir Mahu. Now, let's say you make a bow, right? A slip knot, right? Our shoelaces are just a wonderful example, where after you tied it, all you need to do is just simply take one of the strings, pull, and it becomes undone. What would Rav Meir say under those circumstances? Meaning, what the Gemara wants to know is good shot in Rav Meir. Time of the Rav Meir, Mishum Diachol La'atira Ba'achas Mi'adavhu, V'hana Mi'achol La'atira. Now, on one hand, with your shoes and a slip knot, so what you could do is just simply pull on the string with one hand and you release it and you can untie it. And Rav Meir would say, okay, good. That is the definition of a knot that can be undone with one hand, which absolves it from being a knot that is prohibited. That's one possibility. Or maybe no. Maybe what's really behind Rav Meir is if it's the kind of knot that you can untie with one hand, it means that it wasn't tied tightly. And what maybe Rav Meir is saying is that untying it with one hand is not the cause of exempting it, but rather it is just simply a siman. It's just simply a sign that it wasn't tied tightly. So what Rav Meir really meant was by virtue of the fact that you couldn't tie it with one hand has indicated that it never was tied tightly to begin with. But the real definition or the real the core issue of Rav Meir is the tightness of the knot in of itself. Now, if this is a better way to understand Rav Meir, so that would mean then that even if it were a slip knot, but it was tied real tightly, maybe Rav Meir would not absolve that from the malach of kosher. And maybe according to Rav Meir, that would be the malach of kosher. Take the Gemara says, I'm going to leave this question unresolved. I don't know what is the correct shot in Rav Meir. Is the untying with the hand a definition in of itself? Or is it just simply emblematic of the idea that it was never tied tightly to begin with? Okay. We're going to do one more Mishnah, one more piece of Gemara together. We are towards the bottom of Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Bet. Yesh lecha ksharim she'ein chayavim aleihen kekesher hagamalim ukekesher hasapanim. Now, there are certain knots that one is not going to have a full liability. And they are the following. Kosher tisha mateh chaluka. A woman could tie her clothing. In other words, if her clothing, let's say, is like a wrap, and the wrap is completed by making a knot, that would be fine. Chute sivacha, also her head covering. So in order to secure it in place, it's tied. That's fine. Shel paskaya, uritsuos minav sandal, also the belt. Also shoes and sandals. No design v'shemen v'kedera shel basar. Same thing is true regarding flasks. Flasks that are made up of a leather type material. It's got straps to it. Whatever the case is, it can be tied. That's fine as well. They're holding wine. They're holding oil. That's fine. Also a bag that holds a meat in it. And again, it's got straps on it in order to be tied. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer koshrim lefnei habehema b'shvil shelo seitze. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is of the opinion that you could tie in front of the animal in order to make sure that the animal does not leave. We'll discuss more of his position in tomorrow's daf. The Gemara starts off with, can I just try to get a better understanding of our Mishnah? Because our Mishnah was a little bit confusing. Because look at our two Mishnahs that we've covered so far in this 15th parak of Shabbat. The first Mishnah told us what is the kind of knot that is an Isur Daraisa. What did the second Mishnah say? Well, you know, there are some knots that don't have full liability. What does it sound like the Mishnah is about to teach us? Knots that are usher to make midrabanan. But then that's not what the Mishnah does. The Mishnah then goes ahead and advances that these are the kinds of knots that one is allowed to make afilu lechatchila. So the setup of the Mishnah doesn't bring us to the conclusion of the Mishnah. Haguf akasha. That's exactly the Gemara's question. So when the Mishnah opened up, it said, here are a couple of knots that don't have full liability. That means that not nisa daraisa. Ha isura ikab. There's an isa darabanan. And then the Mishnah said, kosher isha mafteh chaluka v'afil lechatchila. And then the Mishnah says, and here are the kinds of knots that you can make even lechatchila on Shabbat. So the Mishnah sets us up. But the Mishnah then doesn't go through the Isuri Durabanan. The Mishnah only goes through things that are Mutar Lagamri. So Hachi Kamar. So the Gemara says, okay, now we're going to have to say good Pshat in our Mishnah. Yesh Ksharim She'en Chayavim Aleim Kekesher Gamal Kekesher Sapanim Umaynihu Kutra Dekatre B'Zamama V'Kitra Dekatre B'Istradya Chiyuvahu Deleka Isura Ika. So encrypted in the Mishnah is actually category number two. Meaning, let's break it down to three categories. We have tying knots, category number one is the Daraisa. That is the first Mishnah. We have encrypted in our Mishnah, category number two. Not Nisa Daraisa, but rather Nisa Darabanan. In a moment, I'm going to explain what are the examples of the Gemara. And then, the next part of the Mishnah that we read, that's category number three. Knots that are Mutar Legamre, totally permissible. Now, what exactly is existing in this category number two? So the Gemara said it, but now I'm just translating. What's in category number two is when you take the rope and tie it to the ring of the camel. Meaning, in the first sugya of our parak, we said that's not nisa daraisa because you do plan on untying it. Okay, that's true. So it's not nisa daraisa, but it's still nisa darabanan. Same thing with the sailor who's now securing his boat to the dock. So in the loop that you're making on the dock itself, that's an Issur D'oraisa, that's a permanent knot. On the other hand, when you're tying your rope to that loop, so you're tying it, but you know you're going to untie it later on, so that's an Issur D'rabanan. Those are examples of Issur D'rabanan, tying to the camel's ring, tying to the already existing knot on the dock. That is an Issur D'rabanan, not an Issur D'oraisa. And then the subsequent cases in the Mishnah, they are Mutar Legamri. Okay, now it requires a little more clarification. I certainly know the difference between category number one versus category number two. Category number one, permanent knots. Knots that you plan on leaving there forever. What's the difference between category number two and category number three? Category number two is rabbinically prohibited. Category number three is Mutar Legamri. So now I go back to Rashi, And now I'm going to point you to look at a particular Rashi, Dibra Amaskal Mafteh Chaluka. Rashi writes over there at the end of the Rashi. It's on the bottom of the Amud Beis. Rashi writes over there. I'll read the whole Rashi. Mafteh Chaluka. Kemoshi Yesh Galachim Ke'en Lishonos Lekan Lekan. V'koshen Shal Yamin B'katev Smol V'shal Smol B'katev Yamin. Okay, Rashi over here points to the priest that lived in his day and age, where they had some sort of wrap in terms of like a cloak. And in order to secure it, so it was tied on one side and not was tied on the other side. Anyway, but then Rashi writes, the kaven de kol yuma sharile lo dami midi lekesha shokayama umut lechatchila. So Rashi says, you're untying that on a daily basis. Tying and untying it on a daily basis, that makes a mutu lagamra. Okay, so if I can paint a picture now for Rashi, it looks like this. Category number one, I'm making a knot and I plan on leaving it there indefinitely. That's an issa daraisa. Category number three, I know I'm jumping. Category number three, I'm tying and untying it on a daily basis. That's mutu lagamra. What's category number two? I plan on leaving it there for some time. Okay, now, admittedly, I'm not going to give a great definition of what does that mean for some time. But in other words, it's somewhere between indefinite versus tying and untying it daily. Indefinite is a daraisa. Tying and undying, tying it daily, mutar lagamrei. Rashi says that if I plan on leaving it there for some time, that's an issa derabanan. I can't give you the duration for Rashi, but I can give you the example. Like tying your boat to the dock. Like tying the leash to the nose of the camel. There, I don't plan on leaving it there indefinitely. On the other hand, I don't plan on untying it today. That's the middle ground, and that would be in issa derabanan, not in issa deraisa, but not mutu lagamrei. That's the entire Gemara is presented by Rashi. Oh, time does allow. Let's quickly go through the Rambam. The Rambam over here in our Gemara also acknowledges that there are three categories. It's hard to say otherwise. Clearly, the Gemara has just introduced us to three categories: the issa deraisa, the issa derabanan, and the heter gamor. The Rambam says actually not like Rashi. For Rashi, there's only one variable to work with, and that is the function of time. How long do I plan on leaving the knot over there? The Rambam says there actually are two factors to take into consideration. Like Rashi says, one is the permanence of the knot. And by the way, that's clear from the Gemara. The Gemara's language that it had was a kesher she'eno shel kayama, which is not nisa daraisa. Anyway, so the Rambam agrees. And by the way, the Rambam got it from the Rif. The Rif can be found here in the back of the Gemara. The Rambam says that one is the permanence of the knot, but there's also another factor to take into consideration, and that is the nature of the knot itself. Is it a professional knot, right? A kesher shel uman. Rambam says that when I have both of these factors in play, where I plan on leaving it there permanently, and it's also a professional knot, under those circumstances, it's an issa daraisa. If I have one of those two factors, so then it's an issa derabanan, meaning according to the Rambam, if it's a permanent knot but it's not professional, or it's professional but it's not permanent, that drops it down to an issa derabanan. Now, according to the Rambam, once it's not professional and on top of that, I do not plan on leaving it there permanently, so then it's mutar lagamrei. So for the Rambam, actually, it's a little easier to articulate how you go from a deraisa to a derabanan. To mutar lagamrei. Daraisa, when both factors are involved, permanence and professional. When a derabanan, when I take out one of those two factors. And then mutar lagamrei, when I take out both of those factors. That's the way the Rambam presents it. It's a little bit better in terms of just seeing the different levels. Anyway, that is the beginning of the 15th parashah. Let's quickly review. We saw this morning the Mishnah at the end of the 14th parashah go over various foods and beverages or rubs that you're anointing, that you're rubbing into your skin, that are going to be okay, acceptable, because that's considered normal behavior, versus you can't do it because it clearly is for refuah. So vinegar, people don't normally just simply sit there and gulp on vinegar. Using wine as a rub, also considered abnormal. We had two discussions on the Amud Aleph of today. One is the discrepancy. Well, actually, three discussions. One is the stira between the Mishnah and the Pasuk of Mishlei. Mishnah says that vinegar is good for the teeth. The Pesuk of Mishlei says it's bad for the teeth. Okay, we gave a couple of resolutions of how to deal with that. We talked about the discrepancy between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah does not allow one to go and be gomea the vinegar, to go and ingest the vinegar, swallow the vinegar. The Braisa says it's fine. So there are two ways to resolve it, but when all said and done, there's really only one way to resolve it. And that is that the Mishnah was talking about the gargling of the vinegar. You're clearly doing that for medicinal purposes. That's prohibited. The Braisa is talking about where you're actually ingesting it. The last issue that we dealt with on the Amud Aleph was Rav's position. Rav Pasan's like Rabbi Shimon that you're allowed to use rose oil, even though it is something that is only used by aristocracy. But if you get your hands on rose oil, you could use it. Why? So Rabbi Shimon says, because Kol Yisrael b'nei malachim, because the Jewish people are all royalty. Rav Pasan's like Rabbi Shimon. However, the Gemara was dealt with the issue that Rav does not always pass like Rabbi Shimon, but Rav passes like Rabbi Yehuda by Davar Sheinu Miskaven. What's the connection between Davar Sheinu Miskaven and our discussion? So I went through Rashi inside. I cited Rabbi Natan, but I didn't say over Rabbi Natan. Anyway, it's a fair question. What's the connection between the two? And according to Rashi, no connection. It just happens to be the Gemara thinks that Rav is always siding either with Rabbi Shimon or with Rabbi Yehuda. Anyway, by Davar Sheinu Miskaven, Rav does in fact side like Rav Yehuda. Davar Sheinu Miskaven is Usser. So how do you deal with the inconsistency that on one area he passes like Rav Yehuda and the other area he passes like Rav Shimon? Gemara's answer as we finish the Perek is that really Rav agrees with Rav Shimon, but not for the same reasons as Rav Shimon. And so therefore, it's only an issue of agreeing with the conclusion, but not with the thought process. That ended the 14th Perek. And this morning we started with the 15th parak. What we learned together this morning is that in terms of making a knot on Shabbos, if it's kesher gamalim, kesher sapanim, that's an issa daraisa. As opposed to if it is not a kesher gamalim, a kesher sapanim, it's an issa darabanan. As opposed to tying various clothing or tying up your food is mutar lagamri. And so what we learned this morning is that there are three categories of knots: issa daraisa, issa darabanan, and heter gamur. What becomes the difference between them? So to say it over like Rashi, if I make a permanent knot, that's an issa d'oraisa. That's the kesher sapanim, kesher gamalim. And the let's go through each one just quickly. The sailor's knot, that's the actual loop that you're making on the dock itself, or the loop that you're making on the boat itself. There, you're planning on leaving it there indefinitely. Same thing with the camel's knot. You're talking about the loop that you're making in the nose of the camel. There, it's going to be left indefinitely. That's an issa d'oraisa. On the other hand, if I don't plan on leaving it there indefinitely, if I plan on untying it at a later point in time, that's an issa d'rabbanan, like docking your boat, like tying the leash to the loop. On the other hand, if I plan on tying and untying it on a daily basis, like your articles of clothing, like your food packages, so that's mutter legamri. That's the way Rashi presents it. And briefly this morning, I went through the Rambam's presentation.